Lows will range from the mid-50s across eastern Wisconsin to the mid-70s across southwestern Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, sunny with a high of 85 and a light southeast wind tonight. The sky will be clear. Expect a low of 64. The wind, light and from the southeast. Tomorrow, sunny and warmer, the high 88. The wind out of the south from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 70 and a south wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday, sunny, hot and humid with a high of 95 and heat index readings from 99 to 104 degrees. The wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Friday night and Saturday, partly cloudy with a low Friday night in the mid-70s and the high Saturday in the low 90s. Expect afternoon heat index readings ranging from 97 to 102 on Saturday. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low in the mid-70s. Sunday, partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. We should see a high in the upper 80s. Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 70s. And out toward the 4th of July, Independence Day, mostly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high in the upper 80s. Monday night, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 60s. At noon Central Time, most locations across Illinois and Indiana reported sunshine. We had a narrow range of temperatures ranging from the upper 70s to the low 80s. At Rockford, at O'Hare, and at Carbondale, 80 degrees. 78 at Bloomington and Mattoon. 78 at South Bend. In Lafayette and Indianapolis, it was 80 degrees at noon Central Time, and at Terre Haute, 79. Willard Airport reported 79 degrees at the top of the hour. The sky, sunny. The dew point, 57. The relative humidity, 46%. The wind out of the south at 5. And the barometric pressure, 30.13 and falling. And at 12:39, 81 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The sky is sunny. Many states say they need emergency relief from the requirements of the controversial law, No Child Left Behind. They say if they don't see some relief, a huge number of schools will face sanctions. NPR's Larry Abramson reports.
The rebellion has begun in Idaho. Under No Child Left Behind, the state is supposed to identify a growing number of schools as failing because they can't get enough students to pass a state test. State School Superintendent Tom Luna says he just won't do it.
We're not going to identify more schools as needs improvement because we know that that is not the correct way to identify them.
Every year, the law's targets keep rising. Luna says many schools that have made great strides in improving achievement still fall below that bar as it floats upward. Congress was expected to make adjustments to give schools credit for their progress, but Tom Luna says in Washington, the law has become a political football in a gridlocked Congress.
And we're not going to be a pawn in those games.
Now, technically, Secretary of Education Arne Duncan could punish Idaho if the state refuses to obey the law, but Duncan may have encouraged this reaction by announcing recently he would grant waivers to states that could not meet the law's standards. Duncan said he had no choice since Congress has failed to renew the law. What Duncan probably had in mind was the reaction from Kentucky. Rather than rebelling, State Education Commissioner Terry Holliday is respectfully asking Secretary Duncan to cut him some slack, but he's proposing to give something in return.
We're requesting from the Secretary ability to utilize a more comprehensive accountability model for our No Child Left Behind reporting.
So Holliday is asking permission to break some of the law's requirements, but in exchange, he's ready to add some new elements to his state's plans for evaluating students.
We're adding two components, growth over time with down to the student level, and college and career readiness, which both of those were a focus of the president and secretary's blueprint.
Holiday means that students will be judged by whether their test scores are steadily improving and whether they are ready for college or a job. As he noted, those are measures that have a seal of approval from the administration already, so it should improve Kentucky's chances of getting a waiver. Without that waiver, Holiday says 85% of the state school districts will be labeled as in need of improvement. Now, not everyone thinks that the law should be changed because schools can't meet NCLB's standards.
Well, I just think it's wrong.
Sandy Kress helped push No Child Left Behind through Congress during the Bush administration. Now with a Texas law firm, Kress says he is worried that these efforts will cover up education failures. He says a key tenet of the law is that schools cannot ignore low performance among low-income kids, minority students, and the disabled.
That is to say that no school is let off the hook if those students are falling by the wayside. Why should we compromise on that?
And that's the question some are asking, whether the latest controversy about No Child Left Behind is a real effort to spur needed reforms, or whether it's really an admission that higher standards are out of reach for some students. Larry Abramson, NPR News, Washington.
A historic compact to protect the Great Lakes became law in 2008. It's being tested for the first time in a thirsty suburb of Milwaukee. Lynette Kalsnes looks into the law and its history.
I'm standing on the shore of Lake Michigan with Joel Brummeyer, head of the Alliance for the Great Lakes. We see a tiny corner of Indiana and then just the blue horizon.
It's pretty dramatic. When you stand on the shore of the Great Lakes, you absolutely believe that there's no way that this water could ever all be used up. And yet, we've seen things play out in the southeast and southwestern United States where resources that were thought to be inexhaustible eventually found their bottom. We don't want to get anywhere close to that here in the Great Lakes Basin.
Consider the mighty Colorado River, where so much water is diverted for irrigation, the river often slows to a trickle by its end. That's why the Great Lakes Compact became law. It's part of an agreement between the 8 Great Lakes states and 2 Canadian provinces to decide who gets Great Lakes water. It's like this invisible international shield that keeps Great Lakes water inside the basin. What helped spur the agreement was a fear that Great Lakes water would end up around the world or out west, filling swimming pools in the desert.
To people in the Great Lakes region, suggesting that that water could be transferred to other parts of the continent is like someone suggesting that the Rocky Mountains could be transferred to other parts of the United States.
Peter Annan's the author of The Great Lakes Water Wars. That fear has a basis in fact. In 1998, Canadian officials okayed a proposal to let the Nova Group ship tankers of water to Asia.
It was seen as the nightmare potential legal precedent, because if you can send Great Lakes water to Asia, where can't you send it?
Lawmakers realized they had nothing on the books to stop it. After years of negotiations, they announced their agreement. Annan says it did more than just prevent diversions. It contained provisions to conserve water and protect the ecosystem.
It wasn't just copying other compacts in the past. What this compact was trying to do was recognize that the environment had a seat at the table and that humans weren't just sort of carving up the water for human sake.
The compact sets a very high bar for decisions to be made about who gets Great Lakes water and who doesn't.
Again, Joel Brummeyer from the Alliance for the Great Lakes.
If you don't have strong legal protections in place for Great Lakes water, anybody can come and make a claim and say, I want some of that.
But for now, it's not Asia or the parched West going after Great Lakes water. It's our own suburbs. The compact is getting its first major test in Waukesha, a city just outside the basin. Waukesha is draining down its aquifer. It's had to build an elaborate system to make its water drinkable.
We're taking the chemical, we're adding it to the water, it's attracting all the radium.
Dan Dukniak, the general manager of the Waukesha Water Utility, says they have to add a slurry of chemicals here in the well to filter out radium. It's a radioactive element that can increase the risk of bone cancer.
As you draw down deeper and deeper into these aquifers, you get to a point where it's brackish water or higher levels of salt.
But do you have any wells that aren't a problem?
No. Simple answer, no.
Under the compact, towns outside the basin aren't allowed to get Great Lakes water. That's because the basin is like a giant bathtub, and outside of it, water flows away, so water is lost to the Great Lakes. The compact is designed to keep water in. There are a few exceptions. Towns that are right on the basin line, or like Waukesha, in a county that is, can apply, but even then, it's a tough process. Eric Ebersberger with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources tosses Waukesha's application on the table.
Well, we've probably got 8 inches of documentation here.
And this isn't everything?
No, it's not everything. Significance is that it's the first application for a diversion to a community within a straddling county. So a lot of people see it as setting a precedent for future such applications, if there are any.
Waukesha will need approval from all 8 Great Lakes governors. From now on, every town that wants to divert Great Lakes water is going to have to go through something like this. But does that mean the compact is ironclad? An upcoming Natural Resources Defense Council report finds some states already missed deadlines for water efficiency and conservation goals. Several environmentalists worry that could put the compact at risk as water scarcity increases. Henry Henderson's director of the NRDC's Midwest program.
Clearly, Congresses can undo what they have done. What becomes vulnerable is having a lackadaisical, tattered, and underinvested in set of institutions. Things that work right don't invite reform.
A law professor at Wayne State University, Noah Hall, thinks it's unlikely, though, the federal government would tamper with the compact.
There are dozens of interstate water compacts. Some have been in existence for almost 100 years. And Congress has never disturbed the settled agreements in any of those compacts.
And if the states do fall behind, Hall says, there's a tried and true remedy, lawsuits.
You rarely get environmental protection without citizens going to court and enforcing it.
Citizens can be powerful outside of court, too. When the Nova Group wanted to ship water to Asia, it was public outcry that turned the tide. Either way, vigilance must also come from citizens who have made their lives on the Great Lakes.
I know everybody's trying to take our water away from us.
Like these gentlemen who gather every morning for coffee near the western border of Lake Superior.
You got to watch these governors from Michigan and Wisconsin and Illinois and Minnesota. Once they get in a room together, a lot of things can happen. And they'll go right through their congressmen, and that, you know, within 2 years you can have water trailing out of here faster than you can make it. So
the compact is designed to prevent that, even in the face of climate change and exploding population counts, if everyone does his part or is made to do so in court. I'm Lynette Kalsness.
There's just a short time left to raise the remaining portion of our membership goal. Here's how you can help. If you've received a letter asking you to renew your membership or make an additional gift, please respond as generously as you can. Your contribution by June 30th will make a powerful impact on the programs you'll enjoy all next year.